Not smarter than the average bear. This is TFG Unbuttoned.
It's the Focus Group Unbuttoned with Jim Bennett and John Nash, an off-the-cuff take on politics, pop culture, and current events.
Hello, everybody. Tim Bennett here, as always, with my good friend and co-host, Mr. John T. Nash. We are the Tuesday podcast, TFG Unbuttoned, from your friends at the Focus Group. Learn all about us at focusgroupradio.com. While you're there, you'll also see our partners, including Critics' Choice Video, who have been with us since we've started this podcast. And we appreciate you spending your Tuesdays or whatever day you listen to us on, because people time shift, Mr. Nash.
They do indeed, right?
Yes, how are you? Are you keeping warm, keeping cool, keeping dry, keeping whatever?
Keeping warm, keeping dry. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty standard winter. Like, we had some snow upstate over the weekend. Very minor, but it was fun to just shovel the powdery stuff, and it's nice and white. And right before we came on to record TFG Unbuttoned, you and I were talking about the hideous situation in Los Angeles with the wildfires. And my takeaway from this is, A, you said it before we were recording. What do you do? How do you pick up the pieces if you lived in some of these neighborhoods that have been decimated? What makes it harder to pick up the pieces is the crap that's going on right now with all the finger pointing and whose fault is it? And it's because of DEI, and it's because of the, I've even read people saying it's because the fire chief is a woman, and it's like, oh my God.
She's lesbian.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is the real problem, and then I haven't seen things like this is Jesus's retribution for, like, are you kidding me? So I'll just say this. I saw an interview from about a year ago. It was an interview of a fireman, a highly ranked fireman in LA, and he said something that was really interesting. He said, you know, we're fingers crossed that we don't have a couple of things align a certain way. And he said, and the host says, what would those be? He said, extremely dry conditions, a favorable forecast, meaning no rain in sight, you know, and he goes, and really high winds from the Santa Ana. And so, you know, now you fast forward, and I've seen video of some of the fires, and, you know, 105 mile an hour wind. And he said, the fireman said, there is no amount of training or equipment that could stop this fire if they all lined up, if you had extremely dry brush, a weather system that was favorable to clear skies and really high winds. And guess what? It was the perfect storm. And it doesn't make anybody feel any better, but it should give people pause who are critiquing this whole thing while it's still ongoing to simply say, have you ever stood and watched a fire being blown at 100 miles an hour? I mean, you've seen the video, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that coupled with the infrastructure, which many municipalities are guilty of going the cheap way because they can't get it through, particularly with undergrounding of power lines,
yeah,
which has been an issue here at Rehoboth even. But I think to go 100 feet, but whatever the number was, like $1 million.
Yeah.
But the infrastructure cost to do that, same thing which happened many years ago with Hurricane Katrina, right? The infrastructure was a problem.
Yep.
And people just kept kicking the can down the block. So, no, I heard all the criticisms as well. And then somebody was even critical of the fact that they're starting GoFundMes, but they've raised more money than they did for the people in North Carolina. So this became an elitist thing. It's like, oh my God, there's 40 million people that live in California. So yeah, it's a little different than, you know, people that live in Appalachia in terms of population. Not that the trauma or the damage isn't as severe. It's just sheer amount of people.
And then not to poke anything, like poke the bear, but I would expect that our politicians might actually be cognizant of the fact that this is an act of nature.
Yeah.
You know, 105 mile an hour winds is practically it's hurricane strength. And to fall in lockstep behind the new commander in chief, who has the empathy of a beetle, I suppose, because right away it's launching into your political opponent for something that is out of their control. It just, and last but not least, California still remains the fifth largest economy in the world. And I'm pretty sure I'm right about that, because the fifth largest economy in the world. A one state in the Union of 50 is the fifth largest economy in the world. That means it's somewhere ranked with, you know, United States, China, blah, 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 California. And we, I think the last thing we should be doing is bashing anybody about this. Instead, it should all be about how can we figure this out? How can we? It's like when Notre Dame burned down and the French president's like, we're going to have this thing rebuilt in 5 years. Yep. They pulled it off. We should have that going on.
Right. Did you see in social media there was a jackass that was, so they have on the TV screen, those scooper planes that are coming in, they're getting water and then they're
and they yelling, dip into a pool or something.
No, so he's going, badass, this is American at its best. This is badass America. Look at those pilots. Badass, badass. And it's getting the kids and everybody all riled up. And then somebody in the comments said they came from Quebec. Those planes are from Canada.
Yes.
The pilots. So.
You know, that's you mean the 51st state?
Yeah. You know, well, that was the other thing. And then there was, I don't know if you saw it, because, you know, when Trump was needling Trudeau, who resigned, the prime minister, but. There was a member of parliament. It was 29 minutes long. I was going to post it, but far too long. But she was funny in that she said, let me educate, you know, the new president-elect on Canada. We're a sovereign country. We're part of the G7. You know, she goes through this whole thing. Then she says, however, you know, it's a good idea about joining. She said, we'd like to invite Oregon, California, Washington State, Maine, New Hampshire, yeah. Any of the border states to join Canada. We'd be happy to take you in. Which was kind of, you know, the touche to Trump, but I don't think he understood the irony of it. But anyway.
Now, a lot of stuff to keep our eyes on moving forward. And one of them is going to be everybody's holding their breath to see what he does on day one with all this flurry of executive orders, specifically around tariffs. And the more I'm reading about it, the more it's going to be a crap show times 10, right?
Yeah, it's going to be chaos. It's going to be a shit show. No, he doesn't understand that was, he doesn't understand the full effect of that. I did laugh that somebody had said about Mar-a-Lago that all the Ozempic and these weight loss drugs that they're, apparently they're quite popular with the Mar-a-Lago set, but they all come from Denmark. So the
which has control of Greenland.
So his threat of tariffs if we don't get Greenland, they said wait till all those babes can't get their Ozempic pens from Denmark, then all of a sudden things will change. So
well, you know, and on the it's a bookended thing. So you have the pens coming from Denmark, and then you have him pushing RFK Jr. to be, you know, the guy that's going to be controlling the health system, and he's against it too. So I hate to, you know, Bob and I have really dialed down our consumption of the news. I still watch Morning Joe now and then, and I still read the paper, but I'm trying not to be as invested in it as I was before the election, because a lot of these unintended consequences from his ridiculous policy suggestions are going to affect most the people who pulled the lever for him.
Yeah.
And yeah. What's the Schadenfreude, the healthy laughter at the misery of others. Although we'll be miserable too. So,
yeah, we just have to hold our nose like we did last time. So, speaking of craziness, we've got, we have three stories for you this week. As always, the first one, it's actually two parts, but the headline is Transgender Bathroom Ban Takes Effect in House Controlled Capital Spaces. And this is many of you heard, there's the representative from Delaware, Sarah McBride, is trans woman. And there was a representative from South Carolina, Mace, who decided that she's not going to allow or just will not allow any transgender people to use the bathrooms at the House of Representatives, other than if they use the bathroom of the sex for which they were assigned at birth. And so they were wondering if this was going to make it, and I didn't quite understand this versus a policy versus
the rules package.
The rules package. So apparently this ban of using the bathroom for trans members and trans workers in the Capitol did not make it into the House rules package, but it did make it into the policies that were brought forward by Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House. I didn't know if that was done on purpose to kind of soften the whole thing. There's actually the picture of him swearing her in. I mean, again, talk about the irony, right? Smiles, families, all there, everybody shaking hands. of him swearing in Sarah McBride. But did you know, is there a nuance between the rules and the policy?
Yeah, so he promised this to crazy ass Nancy Mace, right?
Right.
Who was the only person on Capitol Hill who brought up the issue after McBride won. And it was, and she even admitted that it was specifically targeted at her, which just the pettiness is beyond comprehension. You are elected to represent your district, right? I'm not sure how this represents the district, but maybe it does. Maybe we don't ever want to visit Nancy Mace's
yeah.
South Carolina, right? Her district might not be a fun place to be. So the rules package is one thing, and I think he slipped it. He kept this out of the rules package and did it as just a policy thing. But I love this whole idea that this sentence here about, so according to the congressional record, the policy will be enforced by the sergeant at arms and applies to all areas of the Capitol subject to the speaker's general control. This includes the House chamber, the hallways and pathways in the Capitol designated for House use, and any unassigned rooms in that area per the House rules. So I'm thinking about this for a minute. I think, let's say that you are a trans woman and you're on Capitol Hill doing business. You may or may not even be aware the ban is in effect, right? You go into the bathroom, you go to your stall. I clearly want to say that, your private stall. You close the door, you do your business, you come out, you wash your hands. Thank you for washing your hands. And you go about your business. Is the sergeant at arms going to follow you in? How are they going to know?
Right. It's like smoking in the boys' room, right? It's like, what are you doing? It reminded me of the time we had Aunt Barbara on early on at our time at Sirius. Remember that when she was in the lobby?
Yes.
And she was as her character, Aunt Barbara. And she had to go to the restroom. And then she goes running up to it. And she looks at the men. She looks at the women. She looks at the men. She looks at the women. And I forget which side she ran into, but we were all laughing because, again, it's so absurd, right? I mean, you run in, you go in the stall, you go do your business, and you get out. I don't understand this whole issue about bathrooms. Now, Sarah McBride said she's going to abide by the rules. She said the people of Delaware didn't send her there to fight about bathrooms. And a couple of the other senators, particularly the Senator Fetterman from Pennsylvania, also reached out to McBride and said he could use, or she could use his bathroom anytime. So we'll see what happens. You know,
so this is the long-winded answer to why I didn't make the rules package. Mike Johnson probably just thought, this is such a ridiculous thing. I'll just make it a policy in air quotes, which means it's easily reversed and changed to satisfy, you know, the wing nut from South Carolina. And I'll leave it out of the rules package and everything's done. Like, she had a little moment. She got her social media stuff. She wears her, she's one of the ones who wears a cross all the time and has cross earrings. Like, if Jesus is on her side, then we're all screwed.
There you go. Our next story here, I was unaware. I didn't see this. Time Magazine last year named Elton John Icon of the Year. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did? Okay.
Yes, I did.
I didn't know that. Well, you're probably, because you've got so many places in Manhattan you can walk by and see them on the newsstand. I can't peruse the media.
The magazine stand.
Legendary Elton John, he's had a 60-year music career and of course at 57, I think they said 57 top 40 hits in his career in the US. And he was one of the first artists to ever have an album debut at number one on the American charts. And he's had some health issues lately, particularly with, I guess, going blind or losing total blindness in his eyes. I don't know what that was from. Was that a virus?
I think it was, yeah.
And so in being interviewed for this piece with Time, he talked about, or he touched on, his cocaine addiction that he had. And how he got over it. Were you surprised by the reason for
Well, the for addiction him? Was interesting because he talked about the first time he was introduced to it, and he said it liberated him from his crippling shyness.
Right.
You know, and I read that, and I'm like, okay, so you're someone who performs in front of not 100 people, not 1,000, but plural, thousands, right, on massive stages, and you have this anxiety and shyness. But it worked its way into his life, and it became something that was predominant. His longtime writing partner, Bernie Taupin, said it affected his work, you know, and their working relationship. And the thing that I thought was fascinating is the event and the individual who actually pulled him out of it.
Right. That was Ryan White, who we all know was a teenager diagnosed with AIDS in the early days of the epidemic. And Elton John had befriended him and spent a lot of time with White and his family in Indiana and began to advocate for people with AIDS. Also, we know about the famous Elton John AIDS Foundation, which named in honor of Ryan White. But they said Elton John had gone to the funeral in Indianapolis, and on the way back to the hotel, he said he started to think to himself about what he was doing with his own life and kind of how far he had fallen himself. I don't know if that was the correct quote.
He said it was a shock to see how far down the scale of humanity I'd fallen. So he recognized the debilitating and or the altering, the way your life is altered and that your personality is altered when you have one of these addictions. And, you know, at the end of the piece here, he says, as for his legacy, Elton John says, if people remember that we tried to change the world a little bit, we were kind, we tried to help people, that would be enough. And then he added, and then apart from that, there was the music.
There's the music.
Have you heard Yellow Brick Road lately?
No.
I would recommend. I heard it about a month ago, and I have to tell you something. It brought back a lot of memories. It was one of my sister's favorite albums. I remember the cover. I love that album cover. His voice. What an amazing artist, right? So this was a pleasure to read, and I'm glad he's had this fascinating and life. He's met so many interesting people. And then these personal things that come out about, you know, struggles and addictions are actually kind of helpful, I think, because he was able to get back on track. But what an artist, right?
Yeah, I had a question for you. So he said he was introduced to cocaine by his ex-lover and manager, John Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered in these sort of situations, because you and I have been in situations where we've been interviewed or talked to, and you might have wanted to mention a name of somebody. And I wondered, and a lot of times I don't, and I know you haven't either, but you're like, should you call people out? And I wondered in this case, because I checked to see, it looks like John Reed is still alive. Looks remarkably an awful lot like his husband Furnish now. But I thought, is it like, would this John Reed be okay with the fact that he was called out, that he introduced Elton John to cocaine, or is that just a very...
I think it's such a fascinating question, because if I said to someone, oh, Tim Bennett introduced me to the Pimm's cup,
right?
Yeah, you know, like a cocktail that you would have when you were watching a regatta or something, right? That sounds so innocuous. And but if someone said Tim Bennett introduced me to eight balls
of cocaine and off the stripper's tits.
Then
come on, John, do another one.
Then you kind of cock your head like an animal does when they're like, did they hear a word? Did they hear the word treat? Did they walk? Or
what time's your flight to Paris? 8 o'clock in the morning? No, 8 at night. Go. Yeah. Sorry.
I think
John
it's an
P.
interesting point. Unless, of course, he has said this in some of the books he's, like any of the bios he's had about him or the books he's written about himself. He might have already used the name and everything, and that's that cat's out of the bag, right?
Well, I wondered, because you've had some throughout your career, and particularly a couple of people where you could call out their bullshit, right? And
yes.
I'm wondering, would you do it? And you don't have to answer the question, but I'm just wondering, because you and I may be forced or may be faced with that in 2025, where we've got some projects we're working on. And do you tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, or do you make it a little foggy?
I'm going to answer and say it's situational, but I agree with you. I think it's this. If the reveal of the name advances the narrative, I think it makes sense. If the name has no bearing on the narrative moving forward, maybe it's just kept quiet.
That's a good way of putting it for you.
It's diplomatic, don't you think?
I don't have to think about the names. So, yeah. The final story here, and I laughed about this when this happened last year in 2024, but it's still apparently winding through the court system. And the headline is, they told insurers a bear damaged their car, but it was actually a person in a costume. So There were four residents in Los Angeles, and they were arrested. This was last November, as I said, but this had hit NPR. And they'd been arrested for insurance fraud. And apparently what they had claimed was that they were at Lake Arrowhead, which was a popular park in the California area, and said that a bear had gotten into the Rolls Royce and scratched it up and damaged it. And then they went ahead and also said that a bear, similar claim, got into one of the Mercedes AMG, which is an expensive car, and a 2022 Mercedes. And they actually had film of it, quote unquote. And the idiots gave the film to the insurance companies and could immediately tell that it happened to be somebody in a costume that had gone into these cars and damaged them. But they got away with about $141,000 worth of insurance claim. But now they found themselves in trouble. So I went and looked up the video. John, I pissed my pants. I don't know if you saw it, but first of all, the costume is so bad. It's like Yogi, you know, it's like the dancing bear on on Captain Kangaroo.
Yeah, and I remember that.
In one video, the guy literally walks up to the car and, you know, pulls the handle and jumps in and is in the front seat of the car and scratching stuff with these metal claws on the bear. And then even the California Department of Wildlife says, you know, brown bears like that don't exist anymore. They're extinct. It's really black bears. I mean, they even had the wrong bear costume. So the four of them are in trouble. But I thought this was a funny story.
They even went so far as to the insurance company to invalidate the claim and catch these people, went so far as to bring in like an expert. They had the department and had a biologist from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife review the three alleged bear videos. And they also opined it was clearly a human in a bear. So you have this expert in like, no, bears don't do that. I mean, when you sent this over, the picture that accompanies this article is the bear suit laid out on the ground, like as if you're getting ready to put it on. And first of all, it's brown, and they accused a black bear of doing this, right?
Yeah.
So all these little inconsistencies. So what was missing for me when I read this was, it's an insurance scam, but were they unhappy with their cars or something? Because they claimed the bear damaged. They were not cheap cars. They were Mercedes, right?
No. Two Mercedes and a Rolls Royce. And
yeah, the Rolls Royce.
When I looked at the video, they actually did do damage to the cars. They actually did. So the claws they had were these, and it was so perfect, too. I mean, they were so perfectly spaced and everything. You could tell it was fake. It almost looked like they took a trowel and just scraped it across the seat and across the upholstery and the dashboard, but they did actually damage it. And so I thought, why would you have done that unless they owned a detailer company and knew that, okay, if I get $140,000 out of the insurance company, it's only going to cost me $10,000 to fix. And so we're still going to be ahead $130,000. But
yeah, because they didn't ask to have the cars totaled or anything. I mean, it was like, it's almost as if someone said, I want a new interior. All right, let's have a bear attack and we'll get some new leather. I mean,
no, that's what was so, that was, it reminded me of that story we had a few months ago of the person in the, supposedly in the bear costumes at the zoo in China, remember?
Yeah, in the pen. Yeah.
Right. They didn't have a particular bear, so they put someone in a costume and I'm wandering around thinking, I mean, this, it is so obvious a person when you see this video of somebody literally walking up, boom, 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 up to the car, opening the door.
I can't believe they had to have like a wildlife expert. They had to have that for the court, I'm sure, to say this guy, you know, but even the judge could look at it and say, you know, this looks like someone who came off. Yeah. I forgot all about Captain Kangaroo and the Dancing Bear. It's one of my favorite shows as a kid. So, oh, my God.
Yeah. So be careful if you're going to try to
if you want to do insurance fraud. Think
Make
it
sure
through.
You know what you're doing.
All right. Thank you for joining us today here on TFG Unbuttoned. Focus Group Radio is our podcast. Focusgroupradio.com. Apologies is our website. You can learn all about us there, including our Wednesday show. Wednesday meaning it drops in video form on Wednesdays, and that's the Focus Group at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Everything's available in your audio platform feed of choice, including TFG Unbuttoned and the Focus Group. And a big thanks to our longtime partner here on TFG Unbuttoned, Critics' Choice Video, America's classic movie and TV authority since 1987. You can get there by going to our website, clicking on their logo, and start your trip down the rabbit hole. They have everything you'll want to spend money on, as they say. So please have a great week, and we'll see you here next week on TFG Unbuttoned.
It's the Focus Group Unbuttoned with Tim Bennett and John Nash, available every Tuesday. Learn more about Tim and John, Unbuttoned, and all of the Focus Group platforms at focusgroupradio.com.